So thank you, Fred, for a nice introduction. And I'm very glad that I am able to replace Professor Sabelis here. He was really very sorry that he couldn't be here. And well, it's very nice that I can be here. Thanks for the invitation. I changed the title of my talk a bit. So it's Acculops Nicopersici Induced Pathogenesis Improves the Performance of a Competing Herbivore on Tomato. So as all of you know, plants have several ways to defend themselves against herbivores and pathogens. First of all, there are the constitutive defenses. These are the defenses that are always present. And then we have the induced defenses. Induced defenses are activated upon attack. So constitutive defenses include structures like the cuticula, cell walls, trichomes, or hairs, and allelochemicals. These are chemicals that have a negative effect on survival, growth, and or reproduction of herbivores and pathogens. And then the induced defenses, these include alkaloids. On the right, you see an example of an alkaloid in tomato. It's the tomatin, and it accumulates to very high levels in unripe tomato fruit, and thereby it prevents feeding of the fruit by herbivores. And then we have terpenes, defensive enzymes, inhibitors of enzymes, lectins. Lectins are plant proteins that are capable of binding glycoconjugates, and these are present on the surface of microorganisms. And then we have, of course, attraction of natural enemies by plant volatiles that can be induced by herbivores. And these natural enemies can track down herbivores that are feeding on host plants and thereby benefit the plant. So here you see an overview, a cross-section of a tomato leaf with three different kinds of herbivores on it. All three of them are pests on tomato. In the middle we see a spider mite, which has a stylet of about 80 micrometer, and it uses the stylet to pierce through the parenchyme the mesophyll, and then it pierces into the mesophyll cells and they collapse and die as a result of that. So all three these herbivores are cell content feeders. On the right we have a whitefly. They are much bigger and have a much longer stylet with which they are able to reach the phloem and xylem vessels, and they can withdraw nutrients from these vessels. And then on the left, we see the tomato russet mites, which is extremely small compared to the others. It has a stylet of only about 10 micrometer, and it can only reach the cells on the epidermis of the leaf. Now, the type of attacker is important in determining which defenses are induced. So when a plant is being attacked, it activates a resistance response, and this activation of the response starts with the perception of feeding. So first the plant has to perceive that it's being fed upon. And this leads to the production of local and systemic signals. Local meaning at the site where the attack is taking place, and systemic away from the site where it's being attacked in distal plant parts. And these signals include production of, for instance, jasmonic acid and salicylic acid. These are two important hormones involved in plant defense. And those hormones trigger then the resistance response, which will have then a negative effect on the attacker. Now, what is being known about these hormones is that in response to pathogens and whiteflies, we get accumulation of salicylic acid. Spider mites typically induce production of jasmonic acid. This is a herbivore-related phytohormone, and there is actually nothing known about, or virtually nothing known about, plant responses induced by tomato russet mites. So the activation of induced defenses is regulated by jasmonic acid and salicylic acid pathway. Here you see a short overview of both pathways. I will not go into the details, but jasmonic acid is produced in response to attack by herbivores, and salicylic acid is typically produced in response to attack by pathogens. And important for the rest of the story is that there is a negative crosstalk between those two pathways. So accumulation of salicylic acid will inhibit expression of genes that are responsive to gestmonic acid. And this actually also works the other way around. So high levels of gestmonic acid will suppress the expression of genes that respond to salicylic acid. So these are the two main players in my project. First of all, Aquilops lycopersici, the tomato russet mite. As you all know, it belongs to the Eriophyidae. It is a plant eater, very host specific. And that's one of the reasons that we find it so interesting, that it's really a specialist on tomato and other Solanaceae species. They are very small. The adult females are only between 120 and 150 micrometer long. Eggs about 20 micrometer. And they are an important pest on tomato. And that's also a reason why we study them, because tomato is an important crop for the Netherlands. And then we have spider mites. These are generalists. They can live on over 900 different plant species. As we have seen already, they are stylet feeders and they attack mesophyll cells. And we know quite a lot about induced responses in tomato in response to spider mites from previous work in our lab. Here is a picture that tries to give an impression of the feeding behavior of Aquilops. So what has been described in the literature is that the tomato russet mite starts by puncturing epidermal cells, and in response to this, you will get deposition of callos and lignification of cell walls of the adjacent cells. And this will cause the mite will go away in response to this and start to attack distal cells. And this will lead to a sort of a general silvering discoloration of the under surface of the leaf, as you can see on the picture left down. So an interesting observation that we did in collaboration with people at Koppert, which is a company that basically sells natural enemies, and they are also interested in Aquilops lycopersici because it's an important pest. And what they observed is that when you infest tomato stems with this mite, that after a couple of days, that basically the glandular trichomes fall down, they disappear. So on the upper stem, you see a stem completely full with russet mites, and you see basically there are no glandular trichomes left on this stem in comparison to the stem on the below, where you still see a few mites, but here the trichomes are still intact. So we don't know what it means, if this is a response of the plant or whether it's induced by the mite, but we think it's interesting, especially because the maintenance of trichomes and trichome development is known to be regulated by gestmonic acid, which is again involved in defense. And then we made some detailed pictures, or actually Jan van Arkel made it, who is also working at the UvA, of tomato trichomes. And what we saw is that these trichomes, the trichome heads start to become brown. They, this color in response to infestations with Aquilops, and after this browning, they will basically, the stalk of the trichome dries out and they will fall down. Now, and we don't really know what this means, but the browning could be the result of activity of polyphenol oxidases. These are enzymes that catalyze the oxidation of phenols to quinones, and quinones are, well, they can be important in plant defense. So it could be a sort of a response that is important in the defense of the plant against the russet mites. But we are still, in the process of figuring out what this means. And this is another picture. Note also the rings at the bases of the trichomes. It's really interesting. So, but this was just an interesting observation. Now I will talk about the result of my work until now. So in the following few slides, I will give you some data on concentration of phytohormones in leaves infested with aquilops, in leaves infested with spider mites, and in leaves infested with both mites together. And so what we do is we can quantify concentrations of phytohormones. Unlike animals, plants don't have glands which produce hormones, but in theory, basically every cell is capable of producing phytohormones. In the lab, we can extract these hormones from the leaf material, and we can then quantify their amounts using LC-MS-MS. And what we also do in the lab is look at expression of genes that are activated in response to accumulation of phytohormones. We do this with a technique called RT-qPCR. So I did time course experiments and looked at the expression of genes in leaves infested with aquilops. And what was striking is that a lot of genes that were involved in cell wall degradation and cell wall metabolism were affected by infestation with aquilops. So for instance, chitinases and gluconases were upregulated. These are enzymes that can hydrolyze chitin and glucan. And these are important components of fungal and bacterial cell walls. And then there are another class of enzymes, the xyloglucan endotransglucosylase hydrolases. They were strongly downregulated, as you can see in the graph. And these are a class of enzymes involved in cell wall metabolism. And this is interesting because there is a paper where they say that in tomato fruits infected by a fungus, the activity and expression of these enzymes is strongly downregulated. And they think that this is a sort of a mechanism that the fungus uses to attack to overcome the plant defense and successfully attack the tomato fruit. So here you see a picture of a fungus that is trying to penetrate the cell walls of a bean. And it's typically in this kind of interactions, so fungi with plants, that you expect high expression of genes involved in cell wall degradation, like we saw in our situation. Now, so if you think about it, if you think about the way that fungi enter plant cells, so what fungi do is they develop a conidium, and this will form a germ tube and will lead to the formation of an aprosolium. And the aprosolium will start to attach itself to the plant cell wall. And then out of the aprosolium, you will get the hyphae, and these hyphae will start to penetrate the plant cell wall. And they can do this either by exerting simply force, or they can secrete enzymes, which then are important for degradation of the plant cell wall. And if you look at the size range, you can see that the penetration hyphae and the stylet of the mite actually is in a similar size range. So it could be that similarities in the plant response that we observe are linked to similarities in the way that the mite and the fungi attack the plant. But this is just speculation. So, and then some data on phytohormone accumulation. So I looked at what happened in the plant after 1 day, after 4 days, and after 7 days of infestation with spider mites, aquilops, and both mites together. And what was striking, that after 7 days, we saw a strong suppression of jasmonic acid and jasmonic acid isoleucine. Jasmonic acid isoleucine is the bioactive compound of jasmonic acid, which actually does the work of activating the genes. And as you can see, that the yellow bar is much lower than the green bar, which means that aquilops suppresses, somehow manages to suppress the production of these components. And also, when we looked at some genes that are regulated by jasmonic acid, we saw that aquilops does not induce expression of this gene. And what was especially interesting is that when we put both mites together, so when we put spider mites and Aculops together, that we saw suppression of the induction that was caused by spider mites, so the fourth bar. And this is another example of another important defense gene of which we know that it is involved in defense. It was also strongly downregulated when we put both mites together. So this was really interesting. So we thought, okay, if Aculops somehow manages to suppress the jasmonic acid related defense response, then a mite species that is susceptible to this defense response should be able to benefit from the presence of Aculops, because Aculops suppresses the response. And indeed, when we put both mites together, spider mites laid more eggs per day than in the situation when they were alone on a tomato plant. And this difference was specific on the normal tomato that we have, but we also have a tomato mutant, a mutant that cannot make jasmonic acid, and here we didn't see difference. So this is really an indication that the effect that we see is specific for the jasmonic acid response being suppressed by Aculops. Now then we wondered, how is Aculops doing this? So there is an example in the literature from a fungus that will that basically manipulates the plant by inducing accumulation of salicylic acid to downregulate the jasmonic acid response. So we thought maybe Aculops somehow is also inducing salicylic acid to downregulate the jasmonate response. So we set out a series of experiments to test this. So we again looked at gene expression of a gene that is a good marker for the jasmonate response, and we saw that, like previous, when we put both mites together, expression of this gene is much lower than in the situation where spider mites alone are on the plant. And then we repeated the same experiment in a tomato mutant that cannot make salicylic acid. And what was really, really interesting is that here we didn't see this suppression. So both mites induced a response that was similar to the response induced by spider mites alone. So this was an indication that salicylic acid is important. Now, besides this, we know that Aculops over time induces a strong and steady accumulation of salicylic acid. There are some examples in the literature from pathogens that do the opposite. So for instance, Pseudomonas, which is a bacterium, and it causes bacterial speck disease on tomato. And what this bacterium does, it produces a mimic of jasmonic acid. So it's really interesting. It is called coronatin, and this mimic of jasmonic acid will then activate the jasmonate response. And this will then, because the jasmonate response is then activated, will suppress the salicylate response. And Pseudomonas is highly susceptible for salicylic acid. So by activating the jasmonate response, it is able to fool the plant and start to develop a disease. So we seem to have a case from a mite that does the opposite. There is one complicating factor, and that is that also when we look at the amount of phytohormones induced by spider mites alone, we see that also when we have only spider mites induce salicylic acid. So the antagonism does not always work. It seems to be specific for Aculops. Now, and then in a final experiment, we wanted to know whether the response that is induced by Aculops is important for a pathogen. So is a pathogen that is, we know, is susceptible to salicylic acid, is it hindered by the response that is induced by Aculops? So as you can see, we saw that indeed that the pathogen did worse, grew less well in the situation where it was infiltrated in the plant where there had been tomato russet mite on. And when we, as a control, we included plants that are unable to accumulate salicylic acid, and here we didn't see a difference. So this is indeed proof that Aculops induces a response dependent on salicylic acid, and that can negatively affect growth of Pseudomonas. So to conclude, Acralops induces pathogenesis in tomato. We observed a strong accumulation of salicylic acid over time and expression of SA marker genes. It suppresses production of jasmonic acid, expression of JA-related defense genes. Spider mites were able to benefit from this. We think that salicylic acid is important for the Acralops-mediated suppression of jasmonic acid defenses. The pathogenesis induced by Acralops depends on salicylic acid and is able to inhibit the growth of Pseudomonas. And finally, the antagonism is, we do not understand everything about it. It's affected by unknown factors because spider mites themselves do not suppress jasmonic acid by inducing salicylic acid. And with this, I would like to thank all my collaborators, members of the group, members of the group of the plant physiology group, and people at Koppert, and Jan van Arkel for providing, for making the nice pictures, and you for your attention. Thank you.